Hey, it's Brian. If you're looking for an angle to get yourself into the sports industry, consider mental health. The sports world is increasingly having conversations around mental health with high-level athletes, coaches, and performers. The importance of an athlete's mental well-being is now recognized as a crucial component for those who want to achieve personal and athletic greatness. The University of Western States Clinical Mental Health Counseling master's and doctoral programs emphasize a systems approach in which students consider the influence of families, groups, teams, and organizations on individual mental health and performance. Sport and performance content is woven throughout the curriculum. Take the lead in a career that helps athletes achieve their athletic and mental best. Visit uws.edu/take the lead for more information. One more time, uws.edu/take the lead. Get some information. Check it out. Mental health. It's a good angle. And the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by the Work in Sports Academy. Check out our suite of online courses at workinsports.com/academy. All of our courses are aimed at helping you become a master at getting hired in the sports industry. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at workinsports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. Hope everybody had a nice weekend. I did. We are going to do a two-parter today. I got two questions that I really like, and neither should take me all that long to explain, but they're super important. So, hey, let's turn two. All right, it's doubleheader season. First one comes via our private Facebook group. If you are unfamiliar with this group, you need to learn about it, okay? If you're one of the thousands of people listening to this episode, you need to be a part of our private Facebook group. Facebook, makes sense. It's a private Facebook group. Search for the Work in Sports podcast, answer a few quick questions, and you get in. Now, why? Why do you want to get in? Well, there's 1,400 people in there who are all sports career-minded like you, or one of our guests, right? Those are the kind of two qualities of people in there, or me. I guess I'm a guest. Nah, I'm a host. Anyway, the point is that the people that are in there are asking questions, having networking discussions, being counseled by former members of our show, former guests of our show, by me. We're answering questions, helping each other out. And it's a really great and supportive forum that people across the nation are really getting to know each other who are all trying to build on their sports career. So it's a good place to be a part of if you're sports career focused. This question comes from that group. Katrina Hunt from the Work in Sports podcast group. Ooh, I got a little close to the mic there. Sorry about that. Katrina says, looking for some resume advice, and I've looked through previous posts as well as listened to podcasts and wanted to confirm some information. Is it necessary to have a summary at the beginning of your resume? And should you list all relevant skills in bullet points? And if so, where would you put that? Thank you in advance for any and all help. Now, many people responded to Katrina's post. I was one of them. So let's talk about the summary and the bullet points. I will not deny that I had versions of my resume with summaries and bullet points. Yes, this did happen. It's probably 2006. But I learned over time these are not the right way to go. So that's the kind of topper on the question there. No, you don't need them. Okay? But I'm going to go into more detail and explain why. And the fact that you were asking these questions earlier in your career and I didn't figure out until my 30s means you are way ahead of me. So congrats on that. But let's explain why. Can't just say no and then not explain it. So let's talk. The summary, the mission statement, the objective, whatever you want to call it, it is the paragraph of wasted space filler that sits right below your contact information on a resume. I've seen thousands of these. They all come in and they say something like this. Accomplished, diligent, recent graduate, interested in pursuing a career in the sports industry. Or, motivated student who demonstrates a strong work ethic and creative ability, seeking to apply my marketing and sales skills as an intern this summer at your organization. Thanks. These are a waste of space. And they're telling me things I should already know about you. I know you want to work in the sports industry, or else you wouldn't be applying to this job in the sports industry. I know you want an internship this summer, or you wouldn't be here applying for an internship that happens this summer. I know you think you are creative and diligent, or you wouldn't be applying for a job that requires you to be creative and diligent. Okay, so stop telling me these things in a paragraph or in a sentence and show me. I had a professor once who used to say that all the time. They're like, show me, don't tell me. Show me, don't tell me. Okay, explain. Give me reason to believe you. Don't just tell me you're diligent. Show me. So get rid of the objective statement telling me why you're interested and why you're here. I know why you're here. You want this job, right? Right? I mean, come on. So objective statements are a waste of space. The summary, waste of space. Give me a minute and I'll tell you what you should do instead. But first, I know some of you are hearing this right now and are like, yeah, but my professor tells me I need to have one. Okay. Some of you are going to do it anyway because you think your dad, mom, whatever, somebody told you you need one. So some of you are going to listen to this, hear what I'm saying, maybe even agree with me, but still do it anyway. Okay, that's fine. But if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. Because I don't want you making the wrong first impression. Because if you say something like the examples I gave above, you're giving the wrong impression. The very first thing they're seeing after your name is this. And it's crappy. So don't do that. Okay, so here you go. If you're going to do it, listen up. Are you ready? Make it customized to that position you are applying for. And make it about what the company needs. Not what you want to need. What they need. Not that you want to work in the sports industry. What do they need? How do you fill it? Okay, my friend Carl Manto, who is the senior director of group sales for the Milwaukee Bucks, gave a great example. He said, for example, if you're applying for a sales position with the Milwaukee Bucks, his team, fear the deer, hashtag, anyway, if you're applying for a sales position with the Milwaukee Bucks, then your objective should be, quote, to become the top revenue generator for the Milwaukee Bucks sales department, to help the sales team reach its goals, and to help the entire organization fulfill their mission of being the most successful and respected sports and entertainment company in the world. Okay, now that objective statement is much better. You're telling how you're going to help their organization and how you're going to line up with them. You're going to become the top revenue generator for the Milwaukee Bucks sales department. And you're going to help them fulfill their mission of being the most successful and respected sports and entertainment company in the world. That's a better objective statement than, I want to use my skills to work at your company. No kidding. Okay, now that required some work on your part, coming up with what Carl said. You had to research the mission of the company you're applying for, and you had to cater your response to that mission. You had to make this specific to them. Work. You had to put in work. Well, good news. This shows you've done your homework and makes a great first impression. Now you've made a good impression. You've turned it around. Anything less than this exact style where you present a benefit to the company, and you need to just forget the objective summary section. So if you're one of those people that does not customize your resume for each application or is not going to tailor their objective statement to that application, then don't do it. Skip it. But if you want to put in that extra work, yeah, you can make it shine. Still not a big fan, but you can make it shine. Now, what do you do instead? Okay. Rather than you telling, I said I would tell you, like, if I was not going to do an objective statement, what would I do instead? Well, you're getting back a lot of space on your resume. Rather than telling me you are diligent, figure out how to incorporate that into the body of your cover letter and your resume. Rather than telling me you want a job in the sports industry, spend more time detailing your experience in the sports industry. The body of your resume and your experience is what counts. What have you done? What change agent metrics can you include? How have you impacted former businesses you worked for? That's what I want to see. Spend more time refining and working in the experience section of your resume. Don't waste time telling the employer what they already assume. Now, as for bullet points, dun dun dun. When 18, again, I did this 2006, 2007, my resume at the very top had something like owned skills and had a list of like 15 bullet points of skills. Why? Well, it's because when ATS systems, which are applicant tracking systems, first came out, they scanned resumes very well to look for individual words or phrases that matched what the job poster wanted, right? So you, the job, the organization would say, we want somebody that has these 15 skills. The applicant tracking system would search resumes, find people that had those 15 skills, and away we go. So myself and many other career advice types said, hey, why don't we start advising people to include a skills section at the top of their resume format with bullet points that would list things like Photoshop, video editing, SEO, Google AdWords, email marketing. We'd hit all the skill buzzwords so we'd be a match and progress through the ATS. This worked like a charm, but it was short-lived. The computers got smarter. They looked for contextual relevance, which is a fancy way of saying they don't want it just to be in a bullet point. They want to see it in one, amongst other words, and interpret what you meant by including it on your resume. How was that SEO skill or video editing used in the context of your experience? So we, the people, had to adjust, right? We had to do this a little bit differently. We had no more keyword stuffing skills lists. So I recommend you write out the skills each particular job says they want. So if you're going to apply for a job as an operations coordinator with the Boston Celtics, well, they're going to write in the job description what they want. So you write out all those things that they want and make sure they appear in your resume for that job, but are in context. So rather than saying bullet point SEO, you may have a line item that says increased organic traffic 27% year over year by implementing SEO best practices. Now that's contextual relevance. You still get the word in there, the SEO, that little buzzword, that's what they want, but you're also putting it in relevance and using metrics. That's the way you need to lay out your resume. Metrics, contextual relevance, identifying the skills that are required for this particular job and highlighting them in your format. Boom. That's how it's done, Katrina. You got this. All right, question number two, double dipper. I spoke in 5 different college classrooms last week, and it was super fun. I love it. I'm a big fan of the college classroom experience, and if you've heard me in one of your classrooms, I hope you liked it because I probably liked it myself. In every single one, I got a question about becoming a sports agent. And look, I'm not going to tell you not to become a sports agent because you could be awesome at it. I just want to have a very realistic conversation about it because I couldn't stop thinking about this. Like, everybody was asking about being a sports agent. Most of the people I talked to, not just in the classrooms and other places, I'm not calling out anybody that made this, that asked this question. I'm just saying most of the people I talked to who say they want to be an agent, in their head, they romanticize it. They think, I'm going to be arm in arm with famous players. They're going to love me. And I'm going to be part of the party scene with them. I hear this and I worry big time. So I'll go back and give you a, for example, making a little analogy here, a little metaphor. Well, it's not really a metaphor, but anyway, when I was in the sports journalism world, whether it was at CNN Sports Illustrated or at Fox Sports Northwest, I had anchors and reporters I worked with daily. Some of them loved the storytelling, the journalism, the reporting, the digging for stories, the analyzing, writing, and composing, that whole process of their craft. They loved it. For them, being on camera was just a platform to tell their story that they created, a means to an end. Then I had others who wanted to be journalists so that they could be on TV. The other way around, right? They wanted the notoriety. The billboards. They wanted to be recognized around town. The story was almost an obstacle course on their path to celebrity, like a nuisance. In my experience, the absolute 100% best, hands down, people in sports television and digital broadcasting love the story and the process of crafting it and telling it. They love it for the right reasons. They're not in it for the glory billboard. The same thing needs to hold true in agency. If you don't love the recruiting phase, the negotiating, the catering to your players' whims, the scraping and clawing your way up to represent just a fifth round prospect, then do not do it. It is not easy. It is really hard. You are not on a fast track to a party. And even if you are, there's a lot more to it than that. It's a hard road becoming an agent. I've met and interviewed some great ones. Nicole Lynn, Lee Steinberg, Jack Mills, great three, boom, those are awesome agents. I mean, Jack Mills representing Baker Mayfield. Lee Steinberg represents Pat Mahomes. Nicole Lynn represents Quinnen Williams. They all represent others too, but those are probably their highest profile ones. But it is sure as hell isn't a quick path to celebrity. It's not a scene out of Entourage where you're just going to be hanging out and having a good old time on their coattails. It's a grind, and you have to love and commit to that grind. If you can do that, go forth and prosper. Good luck. Have at it. Okay. But if you're looking at bright lights and stars, look elsewhere. All right. That's it for today. I have a really cool interview Wednesday with Carlton Roby. I get CMOs and VPs and powerful sports agents all the time, which is super cool. I love it. It's a lot of fun. Okay. But sometimes you have to get back down with the people. Carlton is a college senior with a really cool story about how he's getting his career kickstarted. You gotta listen to this, people. Okay. Carlton's done some really cool techniques and it's really pushing his career forward. Check it out tomorrow. All right, people, get back to work.